And now it's time for Power of Prophecy, continuing the legacy of Tex Mars, exposing evil, and promoting Jesus Christ as Savior. Here's your host, Jerry Barrett.
Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. I'm your host, Jerry Barrett. Honored to have you join me again this week. It is time for Secrets. We are up to volume number 353. Got an email from Coach Dwayne asking for prayer for Bob. Bob is in University Hospital in Beechwood, Ohio. He's unable to get out of bed. He's weak and hurting all over. Doesn't have much of an appetite either. They're running blood tests to try to figure out what's going on with Bob, but Coach Dwayne asks that we hold Bob up in our prayers. Happy to do so. Thanks for letting me know, Coach Dwayne. Now, if you have a prayer request, please, I am blessed to pray for you, your family members. You can email them to me at prophecy@texmars.com. You can call and leave a voicemail for me. You can write me a letter. Anyway, I get it. And as soon as I see that it's a prayer request, I take a moment and I will pray for whatever you ask me to pray for. It is an honor and a blessing. Now I want to get into this week's program of Secrets. And I'm going to start with this one just because it's so bizarre. We just had the Super Bowl, last month? Just a couple weeks ago or so. And the quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks had been pegged a loser. He was a slug, wasn't any good. Then he got with a good coaching staff, and he started showing promise. And he signed a pretty lucrative deal to go play quarterback in Seattle. Led him to the Super Bowl. And that's where it starts. His name is Sam Darnold, and it looks like he could lose money for winning the biggest game in professional football. It slays me. The game was played in California, in Santa Clara, and it triggered a tax bill from California that will exceed his Super Bowl winnings. Now, this is not part of his contract. This is a fee that is agreed upon with the NFL Players Association and the NFL itself. This collective bargaining agreement they have, the winning team players get $178,000. Whether you started, sat the bench, didn't play, if you're on the roster, you get paid. But because of California's hyper-aggressive tax regime, it's possible, I haven't seen proof of this, but it's possible that he could be taxed for $249,000 for playing in the Super Bowl. Now, Sportico is a sports business outlet. They laid all this out. The players are not just taxed on this bonus, this 178 grand. They are ensnared by California's so-called jock tax. It demands a slice of an athlete's income based on how many days he works within the state's borders. So the Seattle Seahawks went to Northern California on February 1st to start preparation for the game. All told, Darnold and his teammates were there for 8 days. And he's going to lose money for winning the Super Bowl. Now, what is just plain poor financial sense at its base is that this tax structure in California has grown so confiscatory as well as detached from common sense that it can turn a championship into a financial penalty. But the question is, what is this money being seized for? This jock tax. Well, it's not being channeled into effective public safety. It's definitely not being applied to infrastructure renewal. for all anybody knows, this money could be already spent by Gavin and the demon rats in Sacramento to pay for Medi-Cal for illegal aliens. It could be housing. It could be food for illegal aliens. The bottom line is we're never going to know where this money goes. But there is one way to fix this. The NFL Players Association and the NFL itself should decide that if California is going to be this financially irresponsible, that a tax bill would be greater than the money earned for playing in a game, they should restrict to hosting the Super Bowl in states without such a heinous confiscatory taxation problem. Now, I'm not a big NFL guy. Sorry, I'm just not. But the ridiculousness. I know I've seen articles where free agents have decided to play in states other than California and New York because of their tax problem. And they continually float ideas to tax billionaires. How do you define a billionaire? Is it making $100 million for 10 years? I don't know. But they call it a billionaire tax. The IRS considers you a millionaire if you can make $1 million in 4 years. These just, they don't make sense to you, but that's what our government and state governments do to us. But losing money to win the Super Bowl just does not make sense. Sorry. Let's move on. You know, recently here in Texas, we had Icemageddon. It didn't turn out to be much, but it was enough that it shut down highways and byways in Texas. We don't drive on snow and ice very well down here. Half of the people here can't even drive in rain, at least not without wrecking. But I remember back in 2021, we had that horrendous ice storm. I was without power for a couple days, and I know lots of people were without power because of mismanagement of our electrical grid by ERCOT. Well, we had another test since then. They claim Abbott and all the legislators and ERCOT have all claimed that they have mitigated the problems. And it got put to the test here. Kerry Clapp wrote on his Substack that renewable generation declined almost immediately as the snowstorm started falling. He wrote, quote, wind, solar, and batteries fell from briefly supplying about 63% of generation to about 7% within 48 hours. Natural gas, coal, and nuclear carried the grid, covering both lost renewables and rising demand. Why would demand go up? It was freezing. Texans don't handle the cold very well either. It gets below 50 and most people just bundle up in parkas. But to think that solar and wind are going to power the entire state during one of these snaps is idiotic. But that's another story. David Blackman is an energy-related public policy analyst, and he noted by the early morning hours of January 26th, natural gas, coal, and nuclear were providing 89% of all the state's power. That's pretty good. I have long been a supporter of nuclear energy. You want something clean? Nuclear would be the way to go. Makes the most sense to me. Politico reported that the U.S. energy grid leaned heavily on coal and natural gas generation to satisfy the energy appetite from winter storm Fern. Now, I know a whole mess of you up in the Northeast got obliterated. I'm going to get to that here in a minute, but the snow and all that going on in New York City, got a story on that one too. Oh my goodness. But the fact that coal and natural gas saved the day, that's reinforcement, isn't it? There were fewer outages and fewer deaths in Texas because of this. Now, there were some down power lines thanks to tree branches falling on power lines and knocking power out, but it wasn't widespread. It was limited, and local utility companies were able to get repairs and get people back on the grid. Now, Abbott blamed the 21 winter storm outages and deaths on our over-reliance on renewable energy. There were new laws passed by Abbott's administration, and they appeared to work just fine. NPR and almost every other controlled media outlet tried to debunk Abbott by citing so-called experts. However, it appears, after what just happened, that Abbott was right all along. Staying in the utility department, electricity, let's go back to California. California is experiencing the country's biggest hikes in electricity rates. This is new research from the Energy Institute at the Haas School of Business at the University of California, Berkeley. UC Berkeley. Energy rate increases have gone up by 39% from 2019 to 2025, much higher than any other state in the union. Why? Well, here's a few reasons. Distribution costs are going up because of responding to wildfires and paying to fix the damages of wildfires. Another driver of these increased rate costs is shifting onto those who don't have rooftop solar as the number of people who install solar power goes up. But there is a law on the books in California that says if utility equipment causes a wildfire, even if they are not negligent, they are still held responsible. But if they're not negligent, they go to the regulator and they say, this is the cost of us doing business. We need to increase the rates, and it needs to be approved by you. And generally, they pass this cost on to the consumer. I really don't understand why so many people still live in California. It's a nice place to visit. I wouldn't want to live there, pay the taxes, the rent, the groceries, the gas prices. I wouldn't have to buy an EV by 2030 because it's mandated by Newsom. Everything California does, they claim to be leading, but they're falling further and further behind everybody else. Arizona, Minnesota, Missouri, Tennessee, Mississippi, and North Carolina are the states with the lowest electricity rate increases. They are all at 1%. Some states even saw a decrease between 2019 and 2025. Nevada saw 12% electricity rate decrease. Iowa saw an 8% decline. Alaska, Kansas, South Carolina saw rates drop 6%. North Dakota and Nebraska, 5% decrease. South Dakota, 4% decrease. Idaho, 2% decrease. New Mexico, Wyoming, New Hampshire, rates dropped 1%. Why does California rates keep going up? Because of mismanagement. I have said, and I will continue to say, that elections have consequences. By giving the demon rats total control over all the policy in California, everything just goes up because of mismanagement. Cause and effect. Here's another example. The cost of living in California is crushing. Between food, gas, rent, and mortgages, as well as taxes, the cost is debilitating. But there's one other factor that is crushing Californians: the cost of car insurance. According to the Los Angeles Times, California drivers are getting hammered by exorbitant car insurance costs. The outlet reported that the top 10 insurers in California were approved to raise premiums by an average of 6%. This is on top of a 15.4% hike in 2024 and a 13% bump in 2023, according to the LA Times. If you add it all up, Rates by insurers who write about 85% of all California auto insurance have climbed on average more than one-third from 2023 to 2025. The Times also talked to a driver from California who had paid the state's average premium of $1,087 in 2022. They could be paying a whole lot more in 2026, assuming they're a good driver and a safe driver. This man is 60 years old, been behind the wheel a long time. He drives a 15-year-old SUV. He's now paying over $3,200 a year for his car insurance, despite having discounts. That is ridiculous. Car insurance is one of the least affordable necessities of daily life. KMPH-TV reported, quote, most auto insurance rates across the country are starting to decline, but not in California. Wow. You know, that kind of, here in Texas, I'm not sure how other states are, but in Texas, you have to carry at least liability insurance. So if you're involved in an accident and you're liable for the damages, your insurance will cover whatever it takes to repair the car and or the driver, passengers of said vehicle. If it's that expensive in California, how many people are going to quit having car insurance? That's going to create a whole nother problem. Let's see, do I feed my family this month or do I keep liability insurance on a vehicle? Feeding the family is always going to come first. At least it should. But why has the agency in California allowed these insurance companies to keep jacking up rates year after year after year? If you're a safe driver, you should pay the minimum and not $3,200 a year for a 15-year-old SUV. That's crazy, just crazy. Well, here's another one. Department of Housing and Urban Development. It's led by Scott Turner. They have ordered more than 200,000 tenants across all federally funded housing units have their eligibility verified after an audit found high levels of deceased and foreign tenants. Yes, the audit found 25,000 tenants who are deceased. That's our government at work, isn't it? They also found that 6,000 of these people are not even Americans. So Mr. Turner said all public housing authorities and owners participating in HUD-funded housing have 30 days to take corrective action to address these findings. He also said, quote, with this new directive and audit, HUD is putting new processes in place to safeguard taxpayer resources and put the American people first, close quote. Wow. Dead people in government-funded housing. Probably still getting a Social Security check and who knows, maybe an EBT card. Free phone. Our government is so bloated. And the bureaucrats, all they want to do is increase their fiefdom. They don't care about the taxpayer. They care about their little power play and their little fiefdom. How else can you explain 25,000 deceased people on the HUD housing rolls? Come on. Well, this one got my attention. It was in Blabberbuzz, written by Tommy Wilson. Marty McCary, FDA commissioner, and he has raised alarms about the widespread presence of controversial chemicals in our food supply here in America. McCary warned that the United States is lagging behind other nations when it comes to protecting consumers from potentially dangerous additives. I've touched on this before, and some of you have done your research as well. You know that there are a number of products in America that are banned elsewhere because of the additives, the preservatives, the chemicals, the poisons. They're not allowed to sell them overseas, so we get stuck with them. McCary said, quote, now there's over 1,000 chemicals that appear in our food supply that are banned in other countries because we've had a regulation, which allows company to self-declare chemicals as safe without really showing anything. Close quote. Companies self-declare that these chemicals are safe. No research, no independent research, no factual science. The companies say that these are safe. Boom, they are not regulated. They just get to go. That is crazy. Macari's comments underscore a need for a system that protects individual liberty and health without empowering unaccountable bureaucrats or corporate interests. You know, when Roundup was found to be a carcinogen and people started suing, all of a sudden, it seemed to make other Americans wake up to the poisons that we have been ingesting for decades. Big corporations are making money hand over fist at the expense of our health. Big Pharma is also tied in because they're coming up with drugs that will combat the poisons that we're eating. Think about that. It's a vicious cycle. Goodness. I am not a fan of Target. We call it Target down here, at least in my house. We call it Target. Make it sound fancy schmancy. But Target, with their gender fluid bathrooms and all their woke idiocy, finally seems to be coming to some common sense. They are going to require every box of cereal that's on its shelves be free of artificial dyes by the end of May 2026. Target confirmed that the change will make it among the first national retailers to remove the additives across an entire grocery category. Breakfast cereal. Our kids eat it. We're poisoning our kids with this garbage. Now, this is only one segment of what's in the stores. It's a start, mind you. It is a start, but it's a long way to go. Kara Sylvester is the executive vice president and chief merchandising officer. She said, quote, "We know consumers are increasingly prioritizing healthier lifestyles, and we're moving quickly to evolve offerings to meet their needs. Our new cereal assortment made without certified synthetic colors makes it easier for busy families to make choices they feel good about and shows what it means to curate a great assortment and lead with merchandising authority." Close quote. That sounds great, but that's only one section, Kara. Let's get on the ball. Let's get other sections to remove these additives, these poisons. PepsiCo. They produce products like Cheetos Flamin' Hot. They also do Doritos Nacho Cheese Cool Ranch. They are marketing these products as free of artificial dyes and flavors. PepsiCo also announced it's stripping artificial coloring and flavors from its Lay's and Tostitos brands, and they're going to shift towards avocado and olive oil instead of canola and soybean oil. That's good. It's better. It's not great, but it's getting better. Is this what Bobby Kennedy envisioned when he came out with Make America Healthy Again? Quite possibly. Although I know he's handcuffed by Big Pharma, Big Corp, all the lobbyists that are in the pockets of our Congress members. But it's a start. Nestle, General Mills, Hershey, Kraft, Heinz, J.M. Smucker, they have all pledged to phase out artificial dyes and flavors by the middle of 2026 and 2027. Kennedy made this a top priority when he signed on to be the Secretary of Health for Trump. If we could cut down the number of vaccines that these kids are having to take before they get out of the hospital. Hepatitis B. These kids don't have it. They're not going to get it unless they're doing drugs, intravenous drugs. Why are we jabbing these kids with this stuff? It's leading to more and more health maladies for our young. That's a fact. A whole lot of our health issues are brought on by Big Food and Big Pharma. I know I keep harping on this, but before the Rona, the World Health Organization recognized transgenderism as a mental health issue. And during the lockdowns and the mask and all the social engineering that went on, transgenderism and gender dysphoria just exploded. Kids were given sex change therapy. They were mutilated. They were taking hormones. Oh, little Johnny wants to be little Janie. Let's chop stuff off. Let's feed them full of this garbage hormone therapy. And yeah, we're going to make a kid. They made a killing, literally and figuratively. But Fox Varian, little girl, thought she was a boy. Was it under pressure? Well, a psychologist and a surgeon talked her into doing this and gave her a double mastectomy. They claimed that because she was thinking she was a boy, that to save her life, to keep her from committing suicide because of mental health issues, let's just lop off body parts. She made history by winning a $2 million verdict against the doctor and psychologist. She is the first gender detransitioner medical malpractice case that has gone to trial. The Westchester County Supreme Court ruled that Kenneth Einhorn, the psychologist, and surgeon Simon Chin ignored standards of care and procedural issues as the teen was pressured into the surgery. Her mother, Claire Deacon, said she opposed the surgery but gave in out of fear her daughter would kill herself. Ms. Deacon said, quote, "This man was just so emphatic and pushing that I felt like there was no good decision. I think it was a scare tactic. I don't believe it was malice. I think he believed what he was saying, but he was very, very wrong." Close quote. Wesley J. Smith wrote in the National Review claiming the verdict is, quote, "an important development in the great cause of protecting gender-confused minors from being subjected to irreversible procedures from which they can never be made whole." The threat of major malpractice verdicts and a consequential inability to obtain liability insurance against such cases will cause the gender ideological medical sector's deeply to be desired demise. Ms. Varian's legal victory open the litigation floodgates, close quote. I played a clip from a girl who had been transitioned, had her breasts removed. And now that she's not a teenager and she's a young adult, she regrets being talked into this. But how many have been coerced into doing stuff like this? It is a crime against humanity. And Mr. Smith is right. This is going to lead to even more malpractice lawsuits. And all of the evil people that pushed this gender transition surgery will have to face the music. I even saw, I don't know if this was parody or not, but the other day on X, Twitter, I saw that a man who had undergone transition surgery to become a female was suing the doctor for malpractice because he didn't have ovaries. Is this a mental health condition? Most assuredly. Will the medical community realize that this crazy idea that men can be women was so off the reservation that science can't back it up, that we will reinstate the fact that transgenderism is in fact a mental health issue? We'll see how that goes. We're going to have to take a brief pause. I want to thank you for giving me some of your time. When I come back, we're going to dive right back into secrets. You're listening to Power of Prophecy. Stay with us, won't you? I'll be right back.
Hello, friends. Jerry Barrett back with you again. I have an outstanding documentary I want to tell you about. It's entitled Fluoride, Poison on Tap. Fluoride was hailed by the CDC as one of the 10 great public health achievements in the 20th century. We've been told for over 60 years that brushing with fluoride toothpaste prevents tooth decay. 95% of toothpaste that's sold today contains fluoride. But sodium fluoride was used in rat poison and incesticides. Did you know that? It also kills humans. By 1930, the aluminum industry was the largest fluoride polluter. Alcoa knew they had to do something about this. The vegetation and the livestock around their aluminum smelting plant was either being killed off or it was deformed. I mean, the video that they have included in this documentary is gut-wrenching. The dangers of fluoride, because it was used part of the atomic bomb manufacturing. Well, because of this, the National Security Agency issued, our federal government claimed that the dangers of fluoride had to be protected as a national security issue, because the people that were handling this in the atomic bomb manufacturing were dying, getting sick, getting cancer. Grand Rapids, Michigan was the first city that they swindled into adding fluoride to the water. They claim that none of the people in the city had any cavities. That was their twist on this story. Unfortunately, for the children that were born during this time, none of them grew up with permanent teeth. They fell out. Gum disease, tooth decay. The teeth fell out. Are you aware that 250,000 tons a year are dumped into our water system of this sodium fluoride? They are using our water supply as a toxic dumping ground. There are numerous interviews in this documentary. There is news clips. Do you remember the Love Canal? Well, I was a teenager then, so I really wasn't paying a lot of attention, but Jimmy Carter was president at that time. This was amazing. The destruction, all in the name of the almighty dollar. The producers, Paul Wittenberg and Chris Maple, navigate the waters, engaging with world-renowned experts in exposing one of the biggest frauds this world has ever seen. Together, they unravel the shocking secrets and deception of a corrupt industry that has been poisoning communities for generations. This surprising research creates a compelling case against the fluoridation of our water supplies, reveals long hidden health hazards, fraudulent findings, and corporate corruption. Some of the people that are featured in this outstanding documentary are Dr. Edward Group, Dr. David Kennedy, the Health Ranger Mike Adams, Dr. Paul Kinnett, Dr. James Rota, Dr. Charlie Geschel, Karen Johnson, Neil Carman, Dr. Laura Presley, Gary Pittman, Mary Ellen Moore, and many others. This is a 92-minute documentary. We're only asking $20 for this 92-minute documentary, Fluoride, Poison on Tap. Please add $6 shipping and handling. That'll make your total $26. You can phone us toll-free in the United States and Canada at 1-800-234-9673. If you care to phone us on our regular line, that number is 512-263-9780. We're in the office Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Central Time. And we look forward to hearing from you. We accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. You can use any of those charge cards by phoning us or on our secure shopping cart at powerofprophecy.com. Powerofprophecy.com. There's an ad for this outstanding documentary on our front page. Click on it, how many copies you want. Put in your name, address, charge card, shipping method, hit submit, we'll get it coming to you. Now, if you care to send in a check, money order, or cash Please make your check or money order payable to Power of Prophecy, and you can mail it to us here at 4819 R. O. Drive, Suite 102, Spicewood, Texas, and our zip code is 78669.
Okay, now let's return to our regular program. Today we are discussing Secrets, volume number 353. Let's go to New York City. I've got a couple things on New York City, but this one caught my attention. It was in Western Journal, written by Michael Austin. A man, 67 years old, his name is Charles Foner. He was accosted by a 32-year-old punk by the name of Cody Gonzalez on May 31st of 2023. Mr. Foner shot the assailant, who was a 15-time career criminal. Mr. Foner had a handgun in his pocket. The Queens District Attorney, Melinda Katz, did not charge Mr. Foner with homicide or manslaughter because it was a clear example of self-defense. But this is the nuttiness of New York. The shooting triggered a search of Mr. Foner's residence, and investigators discovered a, quote, cache of illegal weapons, thousands of rounds of ammunition, hundreds of large capacity feeding devices, and bulletproof vests, close quote. Ms. Katz added, quote, four of the firearms were determined to be assault weapons, and nearly all the illegal firearms were fully operational, close quote. This is America. We do have the Second Amendment, don't we? They claim that this arsenal of lethal firearms and assault weapons were in violation of New York state law. There were more than 13,000 rounds of ammunition. Well, if you can recall back during the Rona, there was a shortage of ammunition. I even went out. I got Leslie for Christmas 1,000 rounds for her gun. Paid a pretty penny. But I bought her, that was her Christmas gift, was 1,000 rounds of ammo. 13,000 rounds? It sounds exorbitant. But he had other guns. But it's America. The Supreme Court justice there in Queens sentenced Mr. Foner to 4 years in prison, followed by 5 years in post-release supervision. Mr. Foner had never harmed anybody. He had never used these weapons in self-defense or in anger. His attorney stated that he had been shooting guns since he was a kid. He has no criminal history. Been around guns his entire life. But because he was in New York and these were unlicensed, the DA decided to bring these charges forward. Goodness. A reporter, Sarah Gonzalez, said, quote, it's incredible that this is happening in the United States of America. This 67-year-old retiree ended up losing his home because of the legal fees, and him being cut off from his Social Security benefits while he's in prison, because you can't get them when you're in prison, close quote. This flies right in the face of the right to keep and bear arms, doesn't it? Wow, just wow. Unbelievable. Let's stay in New York City. Zohran Mamdani, the Democrat socialist that the citizens of New York decided to stick in the mayor office, claimed during his campaign, now these campaign promises are proving harder and harder to make fact. They're just promises, thin air, disappearing right out of thin air. But one of his promises was a $30 minimum wage by 2030. Now currently, the minimum wage in New York City is $17 an hour. That's state law. As that horrendous winter storm was approaching, the Department of Sanitation activated an emergency snow shoveling program that paid $19.14 an hour. If you got overtime, it was $28.71 per hour after you put in 40 hours. These temporary workers were tasked with clearing snow and ice from bus stops, crosswalks, fire hydrants, and step streets. Now, if you are unaware, on X, there are so many videos of these temporary workers. There is one where two guys are shoveling snow and throwing it into the back of a panel truck. That's it. They're throwing snow into this truck. Why? They're not moving much, but they're making bank. And if they're on overtime, they're really getting paid. One woman showed, this is so nuts. It was a 6-inch wide swath to get from the crosswalk to the sidewalk. They weren't shoveling snow to move it out of the way. They were getting paid, and they were doing as little as possible to get paid. But something else that Mom Donnie caught grief for, rightly so, was because of the documentation requirements that were tied to the job. You had to show proof of identification. Yes, you didn't. He doesn't want you to have to do it to vote, but to get this part-time job, this temporary gig, you had to show that you were an American citizen. And he defended this by saying that employment documentation rules that follow federal I-9 require verification of all employers, including municipal governments, to confirm identity and work authorization before issuing pay. I just had to go and get some documents notarized for my mom passing. And I get there, my driver's license expired. It's been expired a few months. I've made an appointment to get it renewed. Can't do it online. I got to do it through an appointment. Used to be you just go into the DMV, you'd show them your ID, you take a new picture, and voila, you got your, you paid your $25, and you got your new driver's license. Yeehaw. Not anymore. You have to make an appointment. Maybe because they're issuing all these CDLs to non-citizens. I don't know. That's another story together too. So the notary goes, I'm sorry, you're, identification is expired and I can't accept this. I showed her my Social Security card, my membership for football officiating in Texas that has my name and picture. No, you need a passport and an ID. Fine. So I had to go back the next day with my passport to prove that, yes, I am actually an American citizen. Born and raised, before she would notarize what I needed done. But these are the same people, like Mom Donnie Newsom, that don't want to require identification to vote. The right to vote is part of our country's fabric. And it shouldn't be non-residents, illegals, visitors, that are determining who gets into elected office to represent us. The idiocy behind no voter ID baffles me. Just baffles me. Well, I mentioned earlier that voting has consequences. Sledge, I am so sorry that you're having to deal with this, brother. My buddy Sledge lives out in Virginia. And Abigail Spanberger, a demon rat, is the new governor of Virginia. She campaigned on affordability. Other Democrats campaigned on affordability. The demon rats have taken over the Commonwealth of Virginia's legislative body as well as the governor's office. And now they want to get paid. They have, according to Fox News, the Virginia State Senate and the Democratic majority have voted to nearly triple their pay if a provision they inserted into their final budget survives House reconciliation and reaches Governor Abigail Spanberger's desk. So they have written themselves a raise. Whew, they've only been in office a few weeks. Now, originally, the legislature was founded as a part-time gentleman's chamber. Lawmakers would return to their regular day jobs when they weren't in session. Supporters of raising the salary of $18,000 for senators and $17,640 for delegates say the structure restricts who can afford to serve as a lawmaker today. These lawmakers also qualify for a $237 per day per diem, mileage reimbursements, coverage of office, meeting, and other expenses. They're making bank. But if it gets signed into law, the senator's new salary will be $50,000. The minority caucus said, quote, teachers got a 3% raise. Democrats gave themselves 300%, close quote. Well, actually, the raise is 178%. But what's the difference? Teachers are only worth 3%, but by gosh, we're worth 180%. Jonathan Turley is a law professor, and he pointed out that the Democrats are going to need this salary increase to afford all the new taxes that they have proposed. They are trying to increase taxes on ride shares, concerts, counseling, leaf blowers, Amazon deliveries, DoorDash, Uber Eats, ammunition, and a whole lot of other areas. The people of Virginia voted for this, and they're going to get it. Voting does have consequences. I mentioned ammunition in that long list of taxes that they are proposing. We're going to stay in Virginia. Now that they have complete control over Richmond, the Democrats are swiftly moving to clamp down on gun rights in spite of what voters and law enforcement say. They don't have to worry about Glenn Youngkin's veto. No, because they got one of their own in the governor's mansion, Spanberger. They have a sweeping agenda that will ban the sale, purchase, manufacture, transfer, or importation of so-called assault firearms, magazines holding more than 10 rounds. They want to impose a 5-day waiting period on all firearm sales, levy an 11% tax on every firearm and box of ammunition, and restrict further where law-abiding citizens can legally carry. Spanberger ran on a campaign promise of common-sense gun violence prevention bills. Now, there was recently a shooting in downtown Austin. I'm going to divert from Virginia for just a second. The perpetrator of this heinous crime had a sweatshirt said Property of Allah. This is right after Trump launched his attacks into Iran. He had a gun, a rifle, and he went to an establishment. In Texas, there's a 51% rule. If an establishment makes 51% or more of their money from alcohol sales, you cannot carry a firearm into that establishment. Most other places, you can carry a gun. But if alcohol's involved, well, we can't trust a bunch of drunk rednecks that got guns to go into a bar and not shoot the place up, right? That's the mindset. But I can't help but think of Susanna Hopp. We offer her book. But her parents and her went to lunch at a Luby's. And before then, you couldn't carry concealed, period. And instead of being arrested and charged with carrying concealed, she left her gun in the car. a madman drove through the window at a Luby's there in Temple, got out of his truck with a gun in his hand and started killing people. This guy killed her parents. She was able to escape, but her parents died. A lot of people died. A lot of people died at this bar. Most people, I will say 99% of the people who have a concealed carry license are 100% law-abiding citizens that aren't going to go into an establishment and just start shooting people willy-nilly. Criminals see it as a gun-free zone. You want to worry about gun violence? Arm the population, Spanberger. Allow people to carry concealed in a lot more places. The Austin Police Department got to this establishment in under a minute because it was on one of the strips, 6th Street, where the bars and everything are on and cops are all down there. Less than a minute, this guy shot, gosh, what did he kill, 4 or 5 people? Wounded another 13? The trauma he inflicted on those who survived, they have to live with it. Less than a minute, the cops were there. They neutralized, they killed the terrorist. But if one of the patrons had been allowed to carry concealed, he could have stopped it within seconds and not a minute. This is the idiocy behind these gun violence prevention bills. Criminals don't care. Criminals are going to criminal. Law-abiding citizens aren't going to go to a bar and just start raising cane and shooting people. I wish people would understand this. There was a survey conducted by Qantas Insights with registered voters. They found 84% agreed the right to keep and bear arms is a fundamental freedom protected by our Constitution. 65 endorsed the view that gun control laws make it harder for law-abiding citizens to protect themselves, while criminals ignore the law anyway. When asked about banning magazines holding more than 10 rounds, 58% of those polled said they opposed the idea. They also opposed an 11% state tax on firearms and ammunition. This is a financial penalty for exercising a constitutional right. 65% of the people oppose this 11% tax. Amherst County Sheriff L.J. Ayers warned, quote, "These measures will fall hardest on citizens who already follow the law, not on criminals who will simply ignore new restrictions as they ignore existing ones." Close quote. Ding, 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 ding. We have a winner. Criminals are going to criminal. They don't care. They just don't care. We'll go back up to New York City. Alvin Bragg, Manhattan DA. Big old piece of trash bought and paid for by George Soros. You know, during that snowstorm, Fern, that Mom Donnie paid people to shovel a little bit of snow and make serious cash. There was also some police officers that were assaulted with snowballs. Some of them had ice, some of them had rocks. And they didn't throw them at each other, they threw them at the cops. They arrested some of these punks. One of them is a 27-year-old. He was charged with assaulting a police officer, obstruction of governmental administration, and disorderly conduct. Alvin Bragg opted not to proceed with the assault on a police officer charge. The other charges have been reduced to harassment and obstruction of government administration as a second-degree violation and misdemeanor. Not a felony, a misdemeanor. A number of New Yorkers are frustrated with the rising disorder, the lenient prosecution, and all of this reinforces the perception that the justice system prioritizes offenders over public safety and rule of law. Now, Mom Donnie, your mayor, attempted to downplay the violence and characterized it as a mob of assailants as mere kids. Kids. 27-year-old kid knows better. This dude has been on supervised release while awaiting trial on downgraded charges. He is scheduled to appear in court in connection with an alleged attempted robbery on the subway. He's a thug. He's a punk. And Alvin Bragg could have charged him with assault of a peace officer. But Alvin Bragg is a puppet for George Soros, and he doesn't have the guts to start charging these criminals and put them in prison. Man, it's so sickening. Well, we go back to California. Gavin Newsom. All signs point to him running for the Democrat nomination for president here in a couple years. Boy, howdy. If you saw the clip, he was at a conference being interviewed, and it was predominantly, I think, a black audience. And he went on to say that, you know, I'm just like you. I got a 960 SAT score. I'm not that smart. What? That's not racist. Not, well, Joe Biden got away with it. If you don't vote for me, you ain't black. That's how the Democrats think. Oh my goodness. The fact that they talk down to their audiences is just pandering, and it's nauseating to me. Well, Real Clear Politics has a correspondent by the name of Susan Crabtree, and she reached out to Newsom's communications team after Sean Hannity got on X and mocked Newsom. He wrote, quote, "Newsom thinks a 960 SAT makes him like black Americans. Let that sink in," close quote. Now, Newsom has said that he's dyslexic. He's been suffering for a long time from it. Well, Real Clear Politics Ms. Crabtree asked for documentation that verifies his diagnosis of dyslexia. Typical Democrat response. When you are faced with a challenge, what do? Izzy Gordon, the director of communications for Newsom's office, replied, quote, "Hey, Susan, thanks for reaching out. Respectfully, F off," close quote. Instead of providing documentation, let's just throw a four-letter expletive out there and show that we are dumber than a box of rocks and we can't communicate properly, that we have to use profanity. Was Newsom pandering? Oh, yeah. You know it. He wants to be the demon rat nominee for president in the upcoming presidential election. If he gets in office, Katie bar the door, look what he's done in California as governor. Rising taxes, rising electricity rates, rising automotive insurance. Not to mention what happened in Palisades and all around Los Angeles County with the wildfires and the lack of response. During the Rona, there were lockdowns, but Gavin was seen at a swanky restaurant with a dozen people drinking wine and having a meal. No masks. Good for thee, not for me. Do as I say, not as I do. That's a leader for you. That's Gavin Newsom, who wants to be president. Oh, heaven help us if he even gets on the ticket. Well, that's going to take care of this week's program. I want to thank you for tuning in and giving me an hour of your time. I greatly appreciate it. And as always, I pray you will tune in again next week at this same time. Tune in and discover the power of prophecy.